think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 281 of Low Limit Football on this 11th of May, 2020. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we are in eager anticipation of live football as the German League gets set to open this coming weekend. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Also, one topic that we've seemed to neglect during this COVID crisis, the transfer window. We're going to get a look at the transfer window, what it may look like this summer, and what certain teams may choose to do with our special guest from Gianluca DiMarzio, Claudio Perfetto, who will be joining us in just a little bit. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Are you ready for live football?
Couldn't wait sooner enough. What's up, Joe?
Oh, man, I'm doing, and I'm so psyched. You know, we've got matches of the week. This is actually going back to a normal show, slowly but surely, right? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. And after a while of having not to deal with football, it's good to hopefully see a positive and hopefully that it'll be made in practice this coming weekend in Germany.
Agreed. And, you know, I know there's some pitfalls out right now that, you know, I believe Dresden, the second division Bundesliga team, has had the entire team quarantined because of coronavirus. We'll see how that whole thing plays out. But I think if anybody's positioned to do this, do it right and do it well, it's Germany, and hopefully they do it safely and just bring back a needed distraction to the masses right now at this point, and I think we're all eagerly anticipating. We're going to have a couple of matches of the week coming up at the end of the show, so definitely stay tuned to see which matches we think are going to be definitely worth watching on Saturday and Sunday this week. So, Rob, we're going to actually bring back one more thing tonight that we haven't had in a while. Trivia, my friend. So Sir Bob's trivia question. I have it. I'm going to give it to you in parts two, my friend. This is, I'm kind of stealing a little bit from Grumpy Pundits from SiriusXM. They've been doing a segment called Who Am I? And they've been giving clues. And then as they give the clues, they guess as to who it might be. So I'm going to give this one to you, Rob, as a Who Am I? Okay. Your first clue tonight will be this midfielder played for six teams on two different continents. Two of those six teams, though, were on loan. He also captained his national team. That's your first clue.
All right. Okay.
Give you your second clue coming up in a little bit. And then before I give you the third and final clue, I'm going to ask you for an answer and see if you've got it. And then I'll give you the third clue. How's that?
Sounds good.
Excellent. So let's get into opening thoughts tonight, my friend. And not only are we seeing the return of football or the return of anticipation of football, I mean, Italy's starting to come out with a schedule. Some rulings came down today that it looks like they may be starting in mid-June. Spain is looking like they might reopen. We already know the fate of the French League. The Premier League is also looking set to open. Again, many of these behind closed doors. But the one I think that many are anticipating because it kind of got stopped so abruptly, Champions League and Europa League are looking like they're set to return. There has been a leaked schedule or criteria come out from UEFA. A couple of places have reported it. We've seen it on NBC Sports. We've seen it coming from Marca. And they've reported a schedule that we could possibly be seeing for the Champions League completion by the end of August, which is great. So let me run this down first in the Champions League, Rob. The Champions League right now is looking to schedule. Again, this is all leaked and not confirmed as of yet. August 7th, Juve, Lyon, and Manchester City, Real Madrid will play their second leg round of 16 matches. August 8th, Bayern Munich and Chelsea, as well as Barca and Napoli, will play their second leg round of 16 matches as well. Then the quarterfinals will begin August 11th and 12th for the first leg, 14th and 15th for the second leg. The semifinals will begin the 18th and 19th for the first leg, the 21st and 22nd for the second leg, and then the final to be held in Istanbul on August 29th. Fast forward to the Europa side. The 2nd and 3rd of August, we'll see first legs played for teams like Sevilla, Roma, and Inter Getafe, which would be on the 2nd and 3rd of August. The 6th would see all the second legs played in the round of 16. August 10th would see the quarterfinal first leg. The 13th would see the second leg. On the 17th, we'd see the semifinal first leg. The 20th would see the semifinal second leg. And on August 27th, you would see the Europa League final played in Gdansk. Some of the other things that have come out of the these various articles. FIFA has approved the 5 substitution rule. Again, you can only make you can only stop play 3 times for substitutions, but you can make stoppages at you can make subs at halftime, which will not go to that 3 substitution rule. That's something they're going to implement. 23 player on match day squad, so they're going to expand the size of the match day roster, a little less room on the bench for folks. Going to be temperature checks for everyone entering the stadium. So this is going to include the photo staff. This is going to include trainers, players, coaches, referees, security guards. Everyone gets temperature checks coming in. The teams traveling by bus will only use 2 buses. So kind of limiting exposure in terms of keeping everything contained. No handshakes during the game. Yellow cards will be handed out for spitting, Rob. This one's an interesting one to me, and I think we should talk about it in a second. And the teams will be required to change their kits at halftime. So to go fresh uniform and clean second half, I think that's a good one. The spitting one, Rob, I'm just going to throw that one at you first, and then we can talk about the schedule. That one's going to be almost impossible to manage, contain, or maintain, in my opinion. I think you'll see, and it's not that they're being disgusting, but I think, you know, you kind of work up a lather when you're playing, and I think you're going to see players just unconsciously spit. It's going to be interesting to see if the referees continue to hand out yellow cards for that type of thing. Hearing that rule change, what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on all the other rule changes, Rob? I mean, do you think that they'll fly, good, bad? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I guess we have to wait. When these leagues come back, it's so hard to say when you're just literally putting these teams, and, you know, obviously anything can happen from here to August. You know, that's 3 months away.
Agreed.
But we have to definitely see how it's made in practice in the other major leagues. We're going to see the Bundesliga, see how that works out. Mm. Eventually, we're probably going to see what happens with Serie A and La Liga. And if everything goes right, you know, the Premier League, which was apparently supposed to look at starting in June. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot that has to be taken into consideration first before analyzing how a Champions League or a Europa League will be fitting. In terms of the spitting situation, that's an interesting one because, like you said, you know, you build up all this phlegm and, you know, eventually you need to release it, for lack of a better word.
Right.
But perhaps they meant spitting as in specific areas. I don't know. That seems a bit vague for them to say such a thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, and then again, you're 22 players on the pitch. I mean, how do you police that, right? And you could almost see it happening where, you know, let's say a referee's playing. I don't want to say that it happens, but let's say they were playing favorites, or it was perceived that a referee was playing favorites in a match, right? You could see a disparaging amount of yellow cards handed out to one team versus the other, and then all of a sudden red flags and people will be up in arms and this rule is terrible. I mean, I get the contagion and trying to, you know, limit exposure and things like that. But for me, Rob, one of the things that came out with a lot of these rule changes is that these players are going to be tested weekly, right? So in my opinion, I think the spinning one probably goes a little too far for me. Because if you're going to have players on the pitch playing, they've tested negative, Okay, so they're clear to play. So, I mean, they're going to rub each other with sweat. I mean, sweat's going to fly. Blood, we've seen that happen before. I think spitting's going to happen. They don't spit on each other. I mean, some players, we won't go down that road. But, you know, they're not necessarily spitting at each other. There's also talk about how this virus, the life of this virus is actually drastically reduced with UV light, so you would expect them playing in the middle of the day under sunlight, that a lot of, let's say there was contagion in their saliva, that it would actually die much, much sooner, which would also limit the risk and the hazard. And we're talking about a player that, remember, to actually set foot in the stadium has tested negative and has tested with no temperature. So I think the spinning one just goes a little too far for me, and I don't want to see yellow cards handed out because a player spit, where, you know, player's been playing 20 years, right? From playing as a little kid all the way up through, he's a 30-year-old adult professional footballer, and he's been spitting since he was four, okay? And you're going to make him stop at 30? I think that's, it's unrealistic to me. You know, but the other rules I like. I like the temperature checks. Team traveling by bus, putting two teams in the bus. Again, I want to make sure that those COVID tests are done before the players get on the bus. Could you imagine? Because now you're containing everybody and isolating everybody into two buses, the whole staff, the team, the coaches. Could you imagine if one player was positive on that bus? I mean, you've basically condemned the whole bus.
Exactly.
So I think the two bus rule is okay, as long as the two bus rule is in place after a negative test. I think that one's okay. Changing of the kits at halftime. I don't know. I can't make heads or tails of that one. I think it's
That's a weird one, though. Yeah. What would be the risk in this sense?
I agree. What would be the risk? I mean, we're sweating. We're going to sweat and rub on each other no matter what.
Sweat every time.
Exactly.
We sweat every time.
So what's the difference if I wear the first half kit or the second half kit? The only thing I could think of, to be honest with you, and again, a lot of times you follow the money. Can you imagine the market for game used kits? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, but
all of a sudden, you know, we're going to remember that the stands are empty. Tickets aren't being sold. That's millions of dollars lost. So now we take Ronaldo's first half jersey against Brescia and say, let's offer it. Let's put it up on auction on eBay. Okay.
I think if it's going to a good cause, for sure.
Well, I think the good cause is going to be replacing ticket sales, to be honest.
No, but
I would agree with you. If it would be an even better gesture if they were taking Ronaldo's game used jersey against Roma to be auctioned off to help pay for PPE for Italian doctors and nurses, you know, to help the fight against COVID-19 or to pay for tests. Right. I think that's a great idea. But it's part of me, or you could say even a portion of the sales will go to that. Whatever. I mean, turn it into good. But I think it's a weird rule that you can actually use the weird rule, and you can take advantage of the weird rule to make the situation better. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to do it. The other ones I totally agree with. Five subs. We talked about that before plenty of times. 23 players on the roster on match day, I think, is a good idea, because you're going to increase the subs. You're going to need the players for it. I also like the idea that you can only stop play so many times for a substitution, because you could see a coach holding all five subs till the end of the match, and then one at a time, boom, 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 and then, you know, just delaying the end of the game, like when people roll around on the ground after getting kicked. So making those subs at halftime, making them make those subs at halftime, forcing them into double subs when they need to. I think, again, we've talked about it, the strategy a coach has to implement in that situation, I think, is going to be interesting. And you don't want to stall the play of the match. So I think that's a great rule as well. And we'll see. And I anticipate we're going to get a good taste of this over the next couple of weeks in Germany. And then as the other leagues come back, and hopefully they do, we'll get a good taste of it there. So, Rob, let's table the opening thoughts discussion. Let me give you the second clue that I have in our Who Am I trivia question. The first clue I gave you, this midfielder played for six teams on two continents. And of those two teams, two of the teams he played for on loan, he is also captain of his national team, or was captain of his national team. Second clue I'm going to give you ready? He is currently part owner of two different football clubs. So there you go. Okay. And and after we're done with Claudio, we'll we'll check into the trivia answer and we'll go from there. So previously, Rob and I had the absolute pleasure of having Claudio Perfetto join us from Gianluca DiMarzio to talk about what the transfer window might look like. It's something that we kind of ignored a little bit given the state of affairs in the world, but that transfer window is coming. It's going to conflict with contracts. It's going to kind of turn things around a little bit in terms of how teams handle this transfer window, and are we done with the days of the 100 million euro transfer, 200 million euro transfer? Are those days gone given the state of finances for many of these clubs? So those are some of the things we talked to Claudio about. So without further ado, the Claudio Perfetto interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from Gianluca DiMarzio, Claudio Perfetto. Claudio, welcome back to the show. How are you tonight?
Doing great, guys. It's a crazy time for all of us, as you know, but it's been so far so good. So just enjoying being home.
It sure is. And you know, this is the kind of thing that it's kind of weird. We would normally have you on this time of year anyway, because we would want to be talking about all the big transfer rumors that are starting to file up, you know, pile up as Champions League winds down and as the leagues are decided. But we're nowhere near that. But at the same time, at the moment, as far as we can see, the transfer window is still planning to be opened on July 1st for the summer transfer window. Is there any talk of changing that, especially given how the football calendar has really been shifted secondary to the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, so I mean, so far there has been no official talk of that, because I think that all the leagues and UEFA are probably more worried about starting back up before they worry about the transfer window. But it is interesting, because obviously if the leagues, I know the Bundesliga is probably the most the furthest ahead out of all the leagues right now. You know, Serie A is trying to get there also. The teams are starting to do individualized training right now. But you know, there's no talk of when they could resume training as groups, and when games would even start being played, if at all. But in terms of the transfer window, you know, it would be interesting to see what happens, because if these leagues do resume, the transfer window right now would be slated to happen right in the middle of when these leagues would probably, you know, be starting up again and ending. So it's interesting to see what the leagues do. I can't imagine that they would allow that to happen, just because teams could reinforce for the stretch run of the season, which would be really interesting and I think exciting for spectators, but it would be so different from what they're used to. But at the same time, you know, it's going to be weird, you know, because if they move the transfer window back, let's say, this summer, then it kind of will affect what happens next year, I think. So they might want to just let it happen in July and August as per schedule, just so they don't have too much of an impact on next season, because I think what they would want to avoid is having a domino effect and having every season down the line also be affected by this, instead of having just one season really be affected by it.
Now, Claudio, I really want to focus about how this affects the players and essentially their chances to move, because as we've already seen, because of the lack of or literally no football at all in the world, you know, we're seeing a lot of teams lose money, a lot of players having their values being downgraded, not to a certain extent, but obviously are being downgraded. So, you know, we might see, are we looking at a situation where, you know, we're going to see players that perhaps are not as worth as they are valued move, at least during this basically new alignment of the transfer window? You know, are we going to see a lot, maybe a more swap deals happen so that teams could save money? I mean, what is your gut feeling about how the players themselves will be factored in?
Yeah, I mean, what I see personally is just the magnitude financially of this is going to be tremendous. And I think every team really is going to be affected by it, obviously. But you know, you look at the disparity in most leagues, and especially in Italy, for example, where you have already Juventus was so far ahead of everyone else, at least financially and with revenues and stuff like that. And you know, in the same class as Juventus, you have teams like Brescia and the lower class teams that, you know, really struggle to even make payroll happen, you know, on a weekly basis to the players. So really, Now this is going to affect everyone. Those smaller teams that are already hurting probably, you know, might not be able to come back from this at all. Where the teams like Juventus, who really operate on a lot of lines of credit and banking and all that kind of stuff, they might not be able to really make those large purchases that they've been making, you know, for De Ligt and Ronaldo over the past couple of years. So swap deals definitely make sense, because I think it's a way, like in American sports, where teams can trade players and teams can get new players into their organization, but they don't really have to lay out a ton of money in transfer fees, where you're really just picking up the salary of the player. And obviously that's spread out over years. So it's a much easier financial proposition for the teams, rather than these huge transfers that have been happening. Cause I, you know, in Italy, for example, there's teams like Napoli who would benefit from this, I think, because they're in a strong position because they make money year after year, and they're not a huge, huge club, but they're very financially sound. So they might be able to take advantage of a situation like this because they have the finances to handle it. Whereas, you know, bigger clubs that run on lines of credit and things like that might not be able to invest as much money, and the gap could become smaller, you know, between Juventus and some of the other clubs in Italy.
You know, it's funny that you did mention Brescia, because obviously their main gem, or the one where they can definitely earn a reasonable profit, would be for Sandro Tonali. And, you know, with the teams that, you know, obviously could afford them, you know, like your Milans, your Juventus's, your Napoli's, you know, they're able to get them. But perhaps they won't be able to spend as much as he's worth. I mean, I do have one suggestion that perhaps, I don't know if this could go to the extent of what can happen in Italy or around the world, but maybe we see, do you feel that maybe there's the case of how, you know, depending on how many, basically the wages that the team has, the value, that they can only spend a certain limit, at least with this new transfer window? Or do you see something like that happening?
Like a salary cap?
Yeah, basically, kind of thing. Yeah, I know it's kind of, it seems a bit much, but, you know, maybe in this kind of scenario that we're in, is there a possibility that that could happen?
Yeah, you know, the thing for me is, if you get to that point, a lot of the smaller clubs probably won't want to get away from it, you know, going forward, because that's something in American sports that pretty much all the leagues except for Major League Baseball have. And it really, it creates a lot of parity, you know, because if you had a no salary cap, let's say in the NBA, and I know we're here to talk about football, soccer, but just for an example, if you had no salary cap in the NBA, let's say in basketball, and the New York Knicks, who are the most valued NBA franchise, you know, they could just go and spend whatever they want on any player and outspend everybody and probably build like a huge super team. And that's what happens in football a lot of the times, where the bigger teams like, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona and Juventus and Liverpool, and for example, you know, just to name some of them, those teams are able to spend so much more than the lower teams. And that's why, you know, they're the ones that are really contending and winning things every season. Whereas in American sports, you know, it doesn't matter how much you're worth or how much you can spend, because of the salary cap, it gives everybody a chance. But, you know, football is different, obviously, because of the different leagues, you know, the promotion, relegation. There's a lot of different things. Not everybody's on the same playing field, even if you were to impose a salary cap. But it would be an interesting idea. But I think that the hardest thing would be to get off of it later on, because it could close the gap. And a lot of the teams, most of the teams might actually like it, whereas the top teams that are, you know, cash cows are the ones that probably, you know, wouldn't want it to exist for long. But the biggest thing to me is probably going to be financial fair play and what UEFA decides to do with that, because, you know, you have a team like Milan who is already struggling financially, and Elliot, the hedge fund, has been trying to, you know, get them on the right track and try to get them to turn a profit. And now you get hit with this situation where they're obviously going to even lose more money than they've been losing over the past few years. So how is UEFA going to manage a situation like that, where pretty much a lot of the teams are going to show losses? And how will they, how would that factor into the transfer market and the future of the Champions League and all that kind of stuff?
You know, Joe, I'll I'll let you follow up on that. I mean, what do you think about something along those lines, at least a temporary basis of sort of a salary cap to, you know, to allow things to be on an equal playing field, even if it is for a temporary basis because of what's going on and around the world?
Yeah, you know, I would echo what Claudio has to say, is that, you know, in the very, very short term, it would help the much smaller clubs, whether we're talking Brescia, or we're talking Atalanta, we're talking a few of those other clubs, Genoa's and those sorts. But at the same time, it's, you know, you almost hamper the bigger clubs, the clubs with deep pockets, the Juventuses, the Inter Milans, you know, we look globally, the Barca's, the Real Madrid's, the PSG's, the Man City's. It starts to hamper them a little bit because you're confining them, and they have been financially sound, or they currently are financially sound. So I think it makes sense in the very short term, because one of the big fears right now about these seasons not getting back underway is the great potential of these clubs to actually go into bankruptcy and just fold, because there's just absolutely no money left. And it's something, a question that I want to follow up with Claudio on. So it makes sense to protect all the clubs as to where they are right now. And it's going to be difficult to do, because there's just not a lot of money out there to be doing these things when we're looking at money for ventilators, we're looking for money for healthcare, we're looking for money for testing and that sort of thing, that to have, let's say, these governments step in and possibly help these situations. So it's on the clubs to be frugal. It might be something that could be entertained in this transfer window. Usually, you know, as we always talk about, the summer transfer window is always the big spender window, where the winter window tends to be a little more conservative. So you could see something like that happening to protect a lot of the smaller clubs. But at the same time, that, like Claudio also said, the idea of coming off of that system would be very, very difficult as well, because it could be something that the smaller clubs would then rely on to be competitive. And then once that system is removed, there's just basically no safety net for those small clubs to fall through. So, you know, I wanted to follow up with a question to you, Claudio, about you know, we talked about Brescia, we talked about Tonali real quick. Atalanta is a club that has done it very, very cheaply, very, very smartly, but they have a great deal amount of great amount of talent. They're moved on in the Champions League. They're going to get that kind of money. Do you see clubs like that, even Getafe that has done well in Spain? Do you see clubs like that to maintain their status, to maintain their club, would look to sell some of their bigger parts? You know, Josef Ilicic comes to mind, Duvan Zapata comes to mind as well at Atalanta. Do you see them, or the potential for a fire sale among some of those clubs that are maybe teeter-tottering on bankruptcy and need to sell their big pieces, where ultimately it'll infuse the cash immediately, but at the same time it would cripple them so much that they may get relegated and then lose in the long run?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you're going to have that happen, where there are going to be clubs that are desperate and their only option is going to be to sell some of their most talented and most valued players. But the issue is who's going to buy them, you know, because, you know, Atalanta is actually pretty financially sound of a club. You know, they've done things very well. They've kept their wages low. The owner has done a great job there. And obviously, like you said, I mean, their wage bill is very, very low. And now they're even making a ton of money in the Champions League by getting to the quarterfinals. You know, who knows if the Champions League is ever going to open up again, and if they'll even be able to receive the revenue money or whatever. But that's another discussion. But let's just say, you know, they do get it, they're going to be fine. But, you know, there are clubs, I know what you mean, there are clubs like that that are struggling, that have prized players that, you know, would normally help them balance the books in the summer. But, you know, are they going to want to sell their players at a discount? Because I think that's what's going to happen. I just can't see teams overpaying for players this window, because first of all, financially, they might not be able to, because especially if they're losing TV revenue and they're losing Champions League revenue, and you know, just the stuff that goes on off the pitch that they have to invest in, you know, with the whole staff of the training ground and the whole staff of the club and ticket sales, and you know, even if we do play, let's say, there's not going to be fans there, you know, for a very long time. So the ticket sales, what do they do? A lot of these clubs already spent you know, got their money from the season ticket holders, and now do they have to refund that money, which they probably should? How are they going to pay that bill? You know, so there's just so much going on with these clubs. And when you could look at the smaller clubs that are going to hurt from that, but also the bigger clubs, because like a team like Juventus, I know we keep going back to them, but these big, big clubs that have suites and clubs in their stadiums, you know, they've taken in so much money from selling those suites and clubs at the beginning of the season. And now if they have to refund all of that, are they going to have the money to do that? How are they going to do that? You know, and how will that impact the transfer window? So it's going to be very interesting to see. And, you know, I think that some clubs are going to have to bring the point back. Some clubs are going to have to sell their most valued players, but it's going to depend on how desperate they are, because I don't think they're going to get the top dollar, whatever they've been used to getting in the past few windows. So are they going to want to sell? Are they going to have to sell at a discount? You know, that's where Rob comes into play, because what he said about swap deals, that might make more sense, because, you know, if you have to get rid of a Zapata, let's say, you know, maybe instead of cashing in on him, you get two or three players from another club, younger players or whatever, that you could bring into the team at a lower wage bill. And, you know, both sides kind of seem like they're winning the deal, you know?
Right, exactly. One more question, and going back to the beginning of the interview, I had said that normally the summer window is the big spender window, where the winter window tends to be a little more conservative. Could we see a flip in that, where this summer window, because of the status that we just talked about, that, you know, clubs are cash strapped, could we see that maybe this window becomes a conservative window, and maybe some bigger spenders end up in the winter window? Maybe teams that are looking forward or doing well in Champions League or doing well in their respective leagues that they want to continue that. Could we see that window become the big spender window?
For sure. You know, I think this window, if it happens as scheduled, I think it's going to be kind of quietly back. You know, there might be a lot of activity, but I think it'll be more swap deals and lower priced transfers. And it's also going to be interesting to see what happens with the Champions League, because obviously in the winter transfer window, if you sign a player that has already played in the Champions League, they can't feature in the Champions League. So now if we start the Champions League in June and July, let's say, while the window is open, that rule typically doesn't apply in the summer window. So is that going to be into play? Because that's the reason why the winter transfer, I think, is a little bit slower and lower value, just because the big clubs are not going to invest a ton of money in a player that can't play for them in the Champions League. You know, especially clubs like Juventus in the past, for example, Manchester City, Liverpool this year, teams that already pretty much have their league wrapped up, you know, which happens a lot, unfortunately, by the winter, the January transfer window. A lot of teams already have significant leads in the standing. So are you going to invest in a player that can't even play in the Champions League when that's really the competition that you're focusing on at that point? So it's going to be – that's going to impact the summer this time around, because if UEFA doesn't allow players to participate in the Champions League that were already featured in the competition, then I don't think teams are going to spend big, and I don't think they'll be able to maybe anyway because of what's going on financially. So I could definitely see this being slower, and then, you know, teams in January, you know, they'll probably not be as aggressive as they've usually been in the summer, just because of the fact that, like I said, you'd have to find players that hadn't played in the Champions League already. And there's obviously it takes a while to get a player up to speed and all of that. And teams haven't been able to do that in January as well as they are in the summer. So your point is good. And I think that we could see the winter be a little bit bigger than the summer this time around, just because it's like it'll be more normal, back to normalcy. Hopefully the leagues will be back and revenues will be back and everything like that, so they'll be able to spend more. But I think the Champions League rule does hamper it a little bit.
So before we let you go, I mean, to have a transfer window expert on and not ask about transfers is really kind of crazy. So I need to get at least a couple players in here. And there seems to be a revolving door here on some rumors the past couple days. There's been rumors about Inter interest in Timo Werner from RB Leipzig. Also, PSG looking to sign Mauro Icardi permanently. And there's always been the rumors lingering about Lautaro Martinez moving to Barcelona. So obviously the three-player carousel with Inter in the middle of it. Where do you see these three players landing at the end of all of this?
Yeah, so I mean, we haven't reported anything recently on those transfers, but I've obviously been following just like you, and it seems like Liverpool is also interested in Werner. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. As far as Icardi, the last thing we saw was that he I think he does want to stay at PSG, but PSG is interesting because, you know, a lot of people thought, and also me in particular, once the hammer came down on Manchester City from UEFA, I thought that PSG might be one of the next to follow, because they were always kind of in that same boat together, you know, that people thought that maybe, you know, they weren't doing things 100%, I guess, accurately in terms of financial fair play. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, the price tag on Icardi right now for the buyout, I think, is around 80 million, which is, he's had a pretty good season there. But you know, PSG at this point, I think they'll lock up the French league any season, really. You know, I mean, I know they have competition here and there from some clubs, but most of the time they're pretty much far ahead of the rest of the league. So I don't think they're purchasing players just to win the French league anymore. So if they feel like he could help them in the Champions League, I'm sure they'll want to sign him permanently. But I have a feeling that they'll probably want to get a discount from Inter because of everything that's going on. You know, I think a lot of teams are going to do that, you know, because they're going to use this as an excuse to make the purchase options less and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, I know there was also talk of maybe, you know, Juventus being interested in him, but I can't see Inter selling him directly to Juventus. So I think it's likely that he does end up with PSG one way or another, because he's had a good season there. They seem to have money, and, you know, they might not be too affected by all of this, and especially if UEFA loosens up the financial fair play restrictions, then, you know, we could see PSG be very, very active. And then, I'm sorry, who was the third one?
Lautaro going to Barca. Yeah.
Martinez, yeah, sorry. So he, obviously, like you said, the rumor has been that he's going to join Barca for quite some time. I'm sure Messi would like him there, you know, because of their partnership with Argentina, and Barca, I'm sure, wants to do whatever it takes to keep Messi happy and keep him there, because I know they've had a little bit of a bumpy road. But Inter is in an interesting situation because they're getting stronger financially. Before all this happened, obviously, they were getting stronger financially. They were out of pretty much that settlement agreement with UEFA for financial fair play. So they've been able to make some moves and spend some money and really strengthen the team. So I don't think that they're going to want to sell Martinez. And if they do, they're going to want to get something back, or they're going to want to invest the money smartly, maybe in a Werner or something like that, or another attacker. And the partnership that he's had with Lukaku has been really great for them, and it's been working really, really well. And on top of that, you know, you don't want to make Antonio Conte mad when he's your manager. And I think by selling Martinez to Barcelona, they would indeed upset him. So Inter is a great destination. You know, they're a big club. They're returning back to their best, and they're right in the thick of a Scudetto race right now. I think in the future, you'll see them back competing for the Champions League. They've been quiet for a few years because of all the financial fair play issues and ownership and all that kind of stuff. But I see them coming out of it. So I don't think Martinez will leave them so soon. I don't think it'll happen this summer, just because they'll want to hold on to him and strengthen the team as much as they can. And they see him as a focal point of the club. If he forces his way out, it's a different story. But, you know, Inter's not a bad place to play. The San Siro is a great stadium. They're a big club. They're going to be competing for everything going forward. So he probably agreed to stay there a little longer. So I don't see that one happening so soon.
No doubt. Claudio, thanks for joining us on the show. Really appreciate your insight into this upcoming transfer window and how crazy it's going to be. And once it does kick off, we look forward to having you back and talking about all the big transfers.
Thanks a lot, guys. It was a pleasure to join you today. It's great to talk about some football. You know, it's been a while with everything else going on. Turn on the news and all you hear are the same things over and over. So it's been fun, and I wish you guys the best, and, you know, stay safe during this crazy time.
And special thanks again to Claudio Perfetto from Gianluca DiMarzio for joining us on the show. Rob, as I alluded to earlier in the show, we have matches of the week to provide for the listeners, which is, I mean, incredibly exciting, right? We haven't been able to mention a match of the week in I believe 2 months. So, and again, like we've mentioned ad nauseum, Germany is returning this weekend. We are very, very excited. We're going to give you two matches to watch out for this week. The first one being the Riviera Derby, Borussia Dortmund Schalke, kicking off on Saturday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. If that's not enough for you, we have a massive, massive, relegation battle going on. Dusseldorf and Paderborn will also be facing off against each other right at the same time, 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. Definitely two of the matches to watch out for. You've got Bayern Munich showing on Monday against Union Berlin. We've got a couple other great ones like Eintracht Frankfurt, Mönchengladbach on Saturday afternoon as well at 12:30. Some great, great matches to keep an eye out for, and we are very, very excited to have Germany return and give us that live football we've all been craving. So, the trivia answer, Rob, I am going to repeat the first two questions or first two clues and then ask you for an answer, and then we can go to the third clue if we need to, okay? So the first clue, this midfielder has played on 6 teams in 2 continents. 2 of those teams were on loan. He also captained his national team. The second clue, he is currently part owner of 2 clubs. Can you give me a guess as to who this might be?
Okay. When you said co-owner, mm-hmm. I immediately thought Ronaldo, but he wasn't a midfielder.
All right.
So, the only one I could think of, is it David Beckham?
The third clue, this Ballon d'Or runner-up had a movie made referring to his uncanny ability to have a ball change directions on a free kick. Bend it like David Beckham.
David Beckham
is the answer. Great job, man. So just a little twist on the trivia question, you know, figured a little something different to go around. The two teams that he co-owns at the moment, by the way, he co-owns Inter Miami, as we all know. He's also co-owner of Salford City, which
with the entire class of 92 of Manchester United.
There you go. The clubs he played for are as follows: Manchester United, Preston North End, which he was loaned out to in 94-95, Real Madrid, the LA Galaxy, AC Milan, which he was loaned out to twice, once in 2009 and 2010, and then Paris Saint-Germain, where he finished up his career. So, David Beckham. So, without anything left on the on the docket, my friend, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, man. Can't wait. We're getting back into real football. It's so awesome. So, for episode 281 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Claudio Perfetto for joining us. Next week, we will talk about the German Bundesliga and what they gave us on the weekend. Also, be sure to catch our This Week in Football preview of the German Bundesliga that we were able to do with Alex Schaefer this week. It is up on our website and on all digital platforms. So, for episode 281 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I am Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Wash your hands and good night.